Okay, let's check the sound. It's okay. Yes. Okay. Any questions or anything to share?
Within the body and with thoughts at the same time. And I saw that you wrote thoughts on the board thing. And then I wondered if it could be a part of what's happening now.
Good. She's asking about thinking, thought, and thoughts, and sometimes, I understand she's saying, sometimes she feels in her body and there's thinking, and whether this can be a way of meditating. So, yes, that thinking is what's happening many, many times. And just to check, sometimes we can feel there's thinking and there's body. And I'm kind of oriented more towards presence. And sometimes it's kind of like I'm thinking and there's a body, but I'm more oriented towards the direction of the thinking. And so that's also fine and something that we can also notice as part of what's happening now, but not to think that that is the same quality of presence. But then as soon as we notice that basically I'm spaced out and kind of feel my body at the same time, that's that magical noticing thing happening. And we can also, on purpose, notice that there's thinking and feel how this thinking feels in my body. That specific thought or cloud of thought or train of thought, what does it go along with? Where? Hard or easy to feel? And then sometimes from there we might feel the kind of inspiration of that train of thought or cloud of thought, which might often be fear, like the jumping off point. And then we might feel the fear in the body. And then we might also feel, what's the point of the thinking as an act? Like, what was interesting about getting distracted? So sometimes we might fall in touch with myself, with life. There's an openness and it's good, and something is like, ah, go away, let's get out of here. But very fast. Sometimes we get close to something important, maybe really simple important. I don't mean only important like the storm is about to come, but just everyday important. And then we're gone. And partly we're gone because there's not anything to hold on to when there's just openness, or when there's a kind of alignment that fits so well we don't really notice much. There's not, because it fits so well. And then there's also distraction from, because it's scary. I don't know myself anymore. Because it's open rather than what I think I am. Does that make sense? Do you want to ask something to help clarify?
It makes a lot of sense. I just wonder if you meant that this rigidness or the thing that you want to distract yourself is from this good openness of being present, or that the content of the thought.
What I'm suggesting is the openness can be scary, yeah. And then any old thought will do. Mm-hmm. Even a horrible thought gives me something to hold, to feel, to orient, or at least to pretend.
Yeah, that makes sense.
And then we can also accept that there will be this movement back and forth in touch with openness, and then some kind of contraction. And it's not like it should be different. It's a process of coming to know that in that openness, we could say, in that openness we survive, kind of. In that openness that can remind us of being abandoned or overwhelmed or whatever. In that openness, it's okay. In that openness, I feel good, I'm allowed to feel good. So the back and forth, just noticing it, not that something's wrong, but just noticing contraction, replacing openness, and then openness is still here. Sometimes I feel it. Thanks.
Thinking and dreaming. Well, there's my sense is that it's very fluid, different. I mean, it just kind of shifts into dreaming, and sometimes I think I'm thinking, but I'm thinking in a dream, and then suddenly it's so strange that I realize actually this is a dream.
Mm-hmm.
What is a dream?
So, dreaming. What is dreaming? Is there a difference between regular thinking and dreaming? And his interest was partly from noticing that he's thinking, and then he doesn't realize that now that thinking has come to be in part of a dream until he realizes that he's in a dream, because it's that weird. There can't be a horse in the meditation hall. I guess I'm dreaming. So this is a subject that's so big that we could find it useful to bring that beginning, being a beginner. And maybe just by the way, feeling what do we like about being beginner and what do we not like about being beginners? Anybody?
I'm asking.
Someone, is it behind the column? There's a...
Yeah.
whoever, yeah, please.
I like that it can be a bit really. Like, when you're a beginner, am I good or am I bad? It's okay for this to be. But when you think you're advanced, then it's much, much worse. Because the ego is really strong.
Yeah. Could you hear? Yeah?
Yeah.
Great. Could you hear behind? And if we can, as beginners, hear that it's as surreal as a dream, that we think we're advanced when our spiritual ego is stronger. When it's insulting to me to think that I'm not doing it well, because my spiritual ego is stronger. Whereas as a beginner, I know it's not my fault, kind of, whether it goes well or badly, or whether I think it was a good or bad meditation. What's not fun about being a beginner?
Incompetence.
So the same thing can cut or free. Noticing how bad we are at meditating or at whatever. So what's hard about being a beginner is the way we take it. And what's good about being a beginner is the way we take it. Is it clear? Can you apply it to your day? It's not clear. Okay. Do you know the word incompetence?
No.
So we can unpack the word incompetence, even if you know the word. Think of a time today that you were not enjoying being a beginner, which could be you were not enjoying learning. You were not enjoying coming up against something that you didn't know how to deal with it. Okay? One of those hundreds of times today. You have an example in your mind? Was it fun? Or was it hard? And if it was hard, why was it hard? If you were a beginner, if you knew, this is my first time, I'm allowed to not know how to deal with this. Oh, that's kind of interesting. What actually is this breath that I can't even feel half of? Or this mind state that keeps coming back? And I can't make it go away. Starting to feel how it could be fun not to know how to deal with something. But only what? Only if what? If I don't think that not knowing is a problem, if I think that not knowing means I'm not good at it, I'm not okay, I'm not allowed, if I think not knowing leaves things open for discovery, then it can be fun. When I think I should know how to do it. And also, usually, I think they think I should know how to do it. I don't want them to know I don't know how to do it. What were you saying?
Fresh, but then again, when the
all thing comes, and I told myself, but you just discovered it now, so okay, wait a second. But still, first writing. Mm-hmm. Right, I really felt this self-anger.
So it was a way of thinking about something, and then a shift.
A way of feeling, a way of judging myself through the outer eyes, and then I really understood that it's just me. Like there's nothing else. I could really see this. There's nobody else at all. And it was very fresh and happy, and like, wow. And then again, I see myself through out. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I think you couldn't hear? Yeah. Okay. So the habit or the way that she was thinking, the feeling is like her whole life she was thinking this way, which was judging herself by seeing those as if those people out there are judging me. And then in one moment she suddenly realized that's me judging me. It's all here. It's not out there, back at me, but it's all in me. And in that moment of discovery, she would have laughed out loud. And it was so a juicy moment. And then soon after, again, she was in her mind seeing herself as if through your eyes, but judging her. And then so that was 2 seconds later, again, the habit of mind happened. And then there was the suffering of that and the anger on top. If I've just discovered this, why am I again doing it? Even though she can see that she's just discovered it, so how could she already, you know, move the river? So she played with it, and sometimes she could find her way back to the freshness that she felt when she remembered it was just her. And then many times she was in the habit and also frustrated that she was in the habit. Thanks for sharing that insight. Maybe it's easier to hear when someone else is describing how it goes for us. How unnecessary the suffering. How obvious that if the river has been flowing this way for 20, 30, 40, 50, 60, 70, 80 years, and then we see, oh, it's moving that way because of that big rock. It could go another way. Oh, wow. Or whatever metaphor. It might not even be a good idea to just move the river right in one. So I'm just inviting you to find how would it be to live and love to be a beginner? What would help you? And so if we come in touch with the subject of dreams as a beginner, then it really can be mind-blowing, really mind-blowing, really, really mind-blowing. that every day, all of us, whether we remember or not, because we would be crazy and we wouldn't be here if we didn't dream. That our mind knows how to go into that particular pattern where the rules are not the rules that we know. And that we allow that to happen to my mind. And if we can feel the opposite movement, like that we want to know about what everybody thinks and knows about dreams. What's the research? What does Dr. So-and-so say? When we have our own like full field to actually be in touch with and wonder about. And I wanted to bring up this subject of professionalization. So the tendency now, even now in Dharma circles, that more and more you should have several certificates. And if that's not surreal, if that's not more surreal than a horse in the Dharma hall, I'm not sure what is. So it can be part of anyone's path to get training, to apprentice, which means to learn in your own experience. But what I notice happens very easily is that we start to give more and more weight to the information about, and it's usually somebody else's information about human experience, and we leave behind our own human experience. And so if we can keep the proportion proper, when we get a training from someone else's experience and ideas and system of thinking, let's keep in mind that the system of thinking is not alive, but it's trying to describe aliveness. It's a perspective on a natural process. And the reassurance that that can give, and the really good tips that we can get there in their place and in that good timing, just when you needed that good tip, right on time, thank you. But it's like the salt in the food, it's not the food. All the systems of thinking are describing the one reality. And when people bother to check how is the system of thinking working out, how is it impacting, then what they notice is what helps are just a few really simple things. Like being able to notice when the alarm system is on, that continuum that we could call stress through trauma, when that's on, and what helps bring that down, or at least notice that that's what that is. That's not true. That's a memory that's stuck on repeat. And so feeling the ground and the body, getting out of the head, maybe a long out-breath, joy, and connection with other people or other living beings, especially if there's a quality of listening. That's what helps. And with that experience, sometimes people go through long years where it's a difficult time. And who knows why they have to live through that, where someone in their family is very ill, or and they're the ones to help take care, to go again with her sister to rehab, to sit another night through with the child screaming. But with this understanding and being in touch with life, not taking that because it's difficult, maybe I did something wrong or poor me, or, but the possibility of using everything as apprenticeship. So even difficult situations can be like, there's a tool that in English we call a shoehorn, which people don't much use anymore. I don't think, maybe I'm just not around people who wear that kind of shoes, but it's like a, usually it would be a piece of metal. It could be a piece of wood that's the right shape to put in the shoe, and then your heel goes against the tool. The tool is between your heel and the shoe, and then you can get your foot in. So a shoehorn. Situations that help us be willing to let kind of go of what's not letting us fit into our lives. Or the other way around, a shoehorn or a leverage, another tool that would, rather than getting your foot in, it might get your foot out of that too tight shoe. So I have a friend and student who works in one of those big global so-called development organizations. And in her childhood, she experienced one parent was, let's say, too loving, and the other parent was too aggressive. And so it's kind of like the music she's finding her way to be is where there can be love and power both without any contradiction. So loving doesn't mean hurt me, and power doesn't mean I'm going to hurt you. But loving power or powerful love is like her song that's calling her, or her wake-up call. And in this huge bureaucracy that she works in, she keeps having so many people stealing her good staff or trying to cut out her department altogether. And we meet on Skype every once in a while over a few years. And I'll get the update of now who's doing what to try to cut out her department, which is about gender. And at the same time, each time she's more in her loving power and powerful love. And so I just get to keep reminding her, you know, even if you got fired today, you've done so well at what your real sort of job is. So getting to know what is our wake-up call in this lifetime, so that no matter what happens, we can play music on it. And a good way to feel your way to, what is your wake-up call? First of all, I talked about yesterday how easily we focus on suffering and hardship and death and loss, trying to get ourselves to wake up. As if this is your last minute, wake up. And what that seems to do now more often, this is your last minute, is kind of we freeze. So with Gautam Buddha, he grew up in a situation of complete pleasure. That was his parents' strategy to keep him safe, that he wouldn't start meditating. And so obviously when he saw something other than pleasure, it got his attention. For us, it's a curious mixture of, most of us, privilege and suffering. And what might get our attention in the way that sickness and death got Gautam's attention is more along the lines of wonder. So yesterday I was talking about, instead of the last minute, the first minute. And the wake-up call is not an alarm. We need to slowly find out that alarm does not mean awake. Even though we've gotten so used to putting that together, we set the alarm to wake up, and we think of that as normal. It's maybe not even a question of, do you have an alarm clock? It's like, what kind of alarm clock do you have? It's not even a clock, it's an alarm clock. And even if we could all notice that if we wake up to an alarm, we get alarmed. It might not be so wise. It might not be the best treatment of the body and mind. And then a willingness to stray away from the group mind. And leave some room to be struck by wonder, to be struck by a dandelion flower, puffball. How do you say that kind of flower, you know? The dandelion that makes the puffball of seeds. Savian? I can't hear you well enough to say it.
There's two parts to the flower, right? The yellow is the savian. The white, sometimes they call it the Saba Savian.
Saba Savian? Saba Savian. Thank you.
It's like the grandfather Savian.
Great. To be struck with wonder by a grandfather Savian. Exactly. Instead of, because we're so like caught up in how much death and loss triggers us, then we're completely also fascinated by so-called youth. We can be struck with how the light is falling on Grandfather Savya. And everything. The poet Wendell Berry also writes non-poetry, and he talks about something that I love also to think about, the two words professional and amateur. Do you know those? Amateur, you know that word, amateur? Do you know what it sounds like to someone who speaks Spanish or Italian or amateur French, I guess, maybe. amateur, lover. The one who loves. What is it in Hebrew?
Chovan.
A liker. Nice.
Endearer.
Endearer? Endearer. So that means by liking it, it's also endeared. Likeable. It's kind of contagious. So to let it be at least possible to imagine that we could stay amateur all our lives while getting really good at stuff. But the being really good at stuff is not the point of why I'm doing it. I'm happy to be good at it, but that's happening, by the way. Because I'm actually in my experience, and so learning is going on. And I'm not getting stopped every time that I'm learning something by my own pride or my own insecurity, if you prefer the word. I don't feel so upset and hurt when I can't do something, because that's not going to get in the way of how much I love anyway. To walk barefoot, to look at the sky, to dance, whatever. And it might seem like joy or enjoyment is an optional part, and perhaps it's not. And we can see the shift when we start to get more professional, how easily we forget to enjoy what we used to love to do. But loving to do it, usually it's pretty easy to enjoy, even when it's a rough ride. Because the loving it is fun. And in that loving it and enjoying it, there's a kind of openness. There can be a kind of openness. It could be like, I love it that much and I'm enjoying it that much that I don't mind if they see that I'm not that great at it. Or whatever they think about it, it's not my problem. Because I'm also not doing it for them so much. Even if I might be doing a helping profession out of love, I'm kind of doing it for life, really. Not problem motivated, but love moved. So we could be so absorbed in enjoying what we're doing, or we could find this is life's gift, not mine, so have some. But we may start to find ourselves with, in connection, not isolated. Not isolated and trying to do it right, etc., like with. And we start to see that we're all doing it not so well, but good enough, because here we are. That's the main thing. So the discovery that Ellen Newell described of, oh, I thought they were judging me, but it's my mind having this habit of pretending that they're judging me. Yeah. Not only judging, she said, all those conversations that seem to be them talking, but it's actually all here. So I could have described that to you and like taught that to you and given you the system of thinking about that, and that would be one thing. But when it just came to you and you described, you said freshness, even though you hate when it goes away, you can, it's not here now, I want it to be here now. Is it better that way? Is the freshness, but the frustration, is it worth? So giving yourself a chance to discover it, life, or whatever is relevant for you today, to discover it in your own language, in your own experience. So Gotam had been practicing the techniques of meditation and going deep that his teachers that so far had taught him. And he could do the techniques perfectly well, better than his teachers. Oops. But luckily he wasn't satisfied. It wasn't fresh. And he got so desperate. It doesn't outright say it in the text, but there were a couple hundred years in between. It probably got edited out. It sounds like he was really, really on the edge. He was ready to give up completely. And then that, like Eleanor described, and something happened. He thought, well, maybe there's another way. And then he didn't like try to remember his list of resources or tools or whatever. All those things I learned, maybe it's that one, maybe it's that one, maybe it's that one. I tried all those. And it turns out it was one of the things on his list. One of the techniques on his list, one of the techniques of meditation that he had learned and that hadn't helped him, was his way. But not as a professional, excellent meditator. It wasn't fresh. So letting himself feel completely lost and abandoned and ready to almost give up, and luckily something just said, maybe there's another way, and he could bear that moment of maybe there's another way that I don't know what that way is. And then he had a memory of feeling just light and happy for no reason, which might not be by chance that it was lying under a tree. You can feel free to try it. That he discovered that light happiness lying under the tree, that quality was the way in, that was his entrance. Not trying to do lightness and joy, but actually like a child, like a beginner, like the first time. It was a memory of himself as a child lying on the earth under a tree feeling good. And he also was terrified. Oh my God. Could that be the way? What if it's a trick? (Clears throat) And imagine for him, after all the pleasure of his childhood, to really know from his own experience this was a different kind of pleasure. That was not a trick. Just feeling discernment. And then letting that take him. Discernment. Knowing, feeling the difference. So letting the alarm system come down enough that you can feel yourself like a child, that you can feel what you're an amateur at. And stay with that naturalness, stay true to that. May all beings live in peace. And may our practice and our lives be devoted to what is important. Towards awakening for all, including ourselves.